1942, I was with Toronto. And Toronto had a working agreement with Pittsburgh. And the terms of the working agreement were that Pittsburgh was allowed to choose two ball players from the Toronto roster at a certain amount. It would cost a certain amount of money for the choice of those two ball players. So Pittsburgh took Jimmy Russell and myself at that price. And that's how I wound up with Pittsburgh. I had been with Harrisburg in 1941, and Harrisburg also had a working agreement with Pittsburgh. They took Billy Cox from Harrisburg. In fact, I went to Pittsburgh at the end of that season in Harrisburg to work out, you know, show them what I could do. But it was part of the Pittsburgh organization, Harrisburg, Toronto. Because Toronto got me from Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. So that was the way that worked.
So it was a question then of being invited to spring training. If you made the club, fine. If you didn't, you went back to Toronto.
No. Pittsburgh bought my contract outright.
Oh, I see.
And at that point, I was the property of Pittsburgh. Of course, let's go to spring training and try to make the club. If not, then you'll go back wherever they send you. It could have been Toronto. It could have been somebody else.
Tell me about spring training in Muncie, Indiana.
Spring training was tough only because of the weather. Since it was wartime and there were restrictions on how far south you could go because of travel restrictions, Pittsburgh picked Muncie, and there were, I think...
was there a college there? Were you training at
Ball State? Ball State College was in Muncie, mm-hmm. But we didn't train at the... I think it was a high school field that we used.
Oh, really?
I don't think that where we trained was part of Ball State.
Were you forced indoors because of snow or rain?
Oh, we had a few snowy days. The weather was abominable for a spring training. I mean, you want a little better than winter weather, and all this was just winter weather. It was cold. We would get a couple nice days, but that was it. That's where you went and you trained, and you got in shape. Hot weather is best, but not completely necessary.
Mm-hmm. Did you spend the whole 1943 season with the Pirates, or were you up in...
No. I was with the Pirates in 42. I joined them the last month of the 42 season when they bought me from Toronto.
Oh,
and then,
I see.
And then went... in 43... I spent all but the last month of the season with Pittsburgh. Toronto, well, I guess it was a deal that was beneficial for both. I think Pittsburgh needed an infielder, and they wanted to take an infielder from Toronto. And Toronto was willing to give him the infielder for the last part of the season. If I would, they needed me. Mm-hmm. Toronto was battling for the championship of the International League then, so they made that deal. I went down to Toronto last month of the season, and Al Rubling was the name of the infielder. Went up to Pittsburgh. And that was it. My Pittsburgh career.
Then you wound up in the Phillies the next year. What happened then over the winter?
Over the winter?
How did you wind up in Philadelphia?
Well, those were war years. course. And that winter, I went to work. I had worked the previous winter at Cram Shipyard in Philadelphia, and went back there in the winter.
What's the name of the shipyard?
Cramp.
C-R-A-M-P.
C-R-A-M-P, yes, yeah. And
that was war-related work, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And when time for spring training came in 44, you had to go to your draft board to get permission to leave essential work. Mm-hmm. And my draft board and Cramps said that no, I was...
Stay in the area.
I was staying at the shipyard. So I told Pittsburgh, I said, it's nothing to do. They won't give me... they won't allow me to leave the job. So I went on a voluntary retired list. In June of that same year, they changed the restrictions and said it was all right to leave. So I applied for reinstatement. The Pirates didn't want me or angry at me or whatever. And asked waivers on me, and the Phillies claimed me. So I wound up with the Phillies.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the rest of the 44 season with the Phillies.
Phillies?
This was a pretty motley crew then.
Well, it was a wartime baseball roster, and we had some good ball players. It was just a last place ball club, and a last place ball club is never good.
Right.
And just one of those things. But they were. What can you say about a last place ball club? You can talk to the present day Phillies, and when they don't understand why they're in last place, but you don't win enough ball games.
Mm-hmm. Do any wartime players stand out in your mind? Players, managers, coaches?
Well, I think that the we had manager at Toronto, Burley Grimes, that I thought was tremendous personality and a real, real successful manager. That was a great psychologist, which I think you have to be in order to be a successful manager.
Mm-hmm. In what way? Did he ride certain guys and leave others alone?
Knew how to handle men.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't
treat
everyone.
Was tough when he had to be tough. Mm-hmm. That goes for me too. Allowed some of the veterans that we had, like we had Burgess Whitehead, mm-hmm. the old Giant second baseman, came down and played with Toronto. And he had a drinking problem, and Grimes wouldn't stop him. You know, he knew that's what he was.
Right.
He was still a great ball player.
Yeah.
But you do your drinking, but don't, influence anybody else or my younger ball players to mm-hmm. go along with you. But he did. He could. He wouldn't ask you to do anything. Like, he would pitch batting practice every day, to. He worked hard to try to get a winning ball club. And he was a good manager, fair. And I thought that he was the best manager that I'd ever played for.
What kind of a guy was Frankie Frisch?
Well, I hate to sound like a dissatisfied ball player, but I had a college coach at Temple, Pep Young, that reminded me of Frisch. And it's got to be a quirk of some kind, I guess. Maybe it might be true in all fields, whether it's athletics or business or what. But Frisch was a great ball player.
Mm-hmm.
great ball player. Mm-hmm. And as I guess the case with most great ball players, he could do things better than the average ball player, and it came relatively easy to him. That's why he was great. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't understand why an average ball player couldn't be great. I mean, he couldn't understand somebody else's lack of brains or physical ability, couldn't accept mediocrity, let's call it that, because he would chew fellas out, chew the team out. To me, he sounded like, impressed me as being a selfish type man that would...
Did he act like a pompous ass most of the time? Or a martinet, one or the other?
Well, I guess a manager would have certain problems. He can't be too friendly with ball players. They're all act the same way, I guess, as far as that's concerned. They go into their own dressing room and they sit there, and on the bench they act like little Napoleon, some of them, and he becomes a part. Instead of being part of the team and the leader of the team, they seem like that they separate themselves from the team, and now I'm the manager, and
is this the way Hirsch was?
Now, I would say on that Pittsburgh team, was Al Lopez was the catcher, and Al Lopez was a star. He'd been a star for a good many years. Now, I don't know how he was as a manager, but I'm sure that he was pretty much the same as a manager as he was as a player. Treated everyone on the ball club alike. Not like, well, you're a rookie, you're a nobody, I wouldn't have anything to do with you. Whether he liked me or what, but we would go on the road. Who are you having dinner with? Come on, have dinner with. Well, he was buddy-buddy with Vince DiMaggio. Mm-hmm. And on the road, they were always together. Come on, have dinner with us, or...
So he added to the cohesiveness of the team then by inviting the rookies to...
Lopez would, yes. Whereas with Frisch, he's sacrosanct, and he wouldn't... you wouldn't see him, or... Like, he wouldn't even come into the dining room most of the times. Have dinner in his room. But I guess that's the way he decided that he would have to be. But I didn't think that he was a great manager. Ranting and raving and, you know, the type of... I don't know if you're familiar with the type of manager that Frisch was.
No, I know he had a pretty rowdy bunch when he was with...
Well, St. Louis Cardinals. His reputation as manager was based on the fact that he manages the Gashouse gang. But he didn't have to manage the Gashouse gang. That Gashouse gang
managed itself.
They were just a great ball club, and you would have to be a horrible manager to kill whatever chances they had of playing great baseball. You could have managed that ball club. You're going to tell the Deans what to do? Mm-hmm. You're going to tell Pepper Martin what to do, or the rest of them?
Right.
It was just a great ball club.
What kind of a guy was Vince DiMaggio? Did you feel that he had a complex because his two brothers were so good?
Well, that would be a hard thing for me to say, is possibly a psychiatrist might be able to dig in and find out the... I could even answer that.
Was he a relaxed ball player, or did he seem uptight, or what kind of a fellow was he?
Very nice gentleman. Very nice fellow. The DiMaggio name was magic, of course, and I think that he felt that he was part of that magic group, his brothers. But Vince was real nice. I guess a ball player has to realize his own shortcomings. You have to, you know, since baseball is a game of averages, it shows you what you're doing. Their records. If you lead the league in strikeouts, you're doing something wrong. If you strike out a lot, and he did. He also was. He had power, good power, and when he didn't strike out, he was a fairly good hitter. But possibly with proper coaching, in some way, they could have made him a better hitter than he was. I understand that when Hank Greenberg first came up, he had the same type of blind spot that Vince DiMaggio had as a hitter.
That's what Benny Culp told me, that DiMaggio had a blind spot around chest area, and if he pitched him there, he couldn't hit it. Anywhere else, he'd murder it.
That's right. Sometimes hard to understand why that would happen, but I say that possibly with the proper coaching or somebody be patient and work with somebody like that, you can change that. Hank Greenberg had the same blind spot when he first came up, and in working on it and with he became the great hitter that he was. But somebody and yourself, you have to work on these kind of things to change them. I feel that if somebody had Vince, I think he was as great a defensive outfielder as the other two. I think his arm was better than the other two's. Joe was supposed to have the best arm, but I think Vince had a tremendous arm. So he could have been a great ball player as the others were, if he could have just, you know. But maybe the problem was that he was the oldest, and he came along, I think, later into the big leagues than the other two did, and I guess at that point they just maybe couldn't work on him if they had gotten him younger.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a nice guy, I think, Vince.
Do any other members of the 43 Pirates stand out in your mind? What about Rip Sewell? What kind of a guy was he? I think he developed his Ephus ball that year.
That's right. He won 20 ball games that year. Rip was a nice fella. He helped me, would work with me if I asked for some help, you know. Nice fella. Cocky. But nice fella. I mean, it's, you judge people by how they treat you.
Sure.
And Rip was always nice to me, and what else can you say about
it? Did he use the Ephus ball very often that season, or was
his
bread and butter, basically?
He wasn't overpowering fast, but he had good control, good slider. And he knew how to pitch. He pitched, kept everything down. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was a good pitcher. That was a, that just was a, he did that for fun, I think. He might have got
gimmick.
Some guys out. Some players, he drove crazy with it. There was a fellow in Chicago, Dom D'Alessandro. He lived in Reading. I don't know if you ever contacted him or not.
He's now in Indianapolis.
Oh, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with how he was built.
No.
They used to call him Fireplug. He was real short and stocky. And Rip always threw that to him. And it used to drive him crazy. You could just see him. He would squeeze the bat and couldn't wait for it to get down. Drove him crazy. But most of the players, they wouldn't swing at it. But it had a certain psychological value as a pitcher. Good hitting is concentration. Concentrate, and this could stop a hitter's concentration, knowing that. When was he going to throw this silly thing? And if he did throw it, guys would throw their bats up and just walk out of the batting box. That to me was the most effective part of the pitch, was that it was a psychological thing too.
But batters actually did that? They actually would just throw the bat up and walk away at times? Or are you just using that?
No. When the pitch, I don't know in length of time how long it would take, but I've seen guys, in order to just drop the bat, just drop the bat in the batting box and just turn around and,
and wait until it floats in and then wait for the next one.
Get ready for the next one. The guys used to, it was a challenge to some hitters. Well, they're going to try to hit it to show Sewell that they can hit it. But it was a funny pitch.
Now, talking about great pitchers, I think you had one, this manager of the Phillies, Freddie Fitzsimmons. What kind of a guy was him? What was he? I understand
I felt
that you used to pitch
felt
batting practice and try and get the hitters out even during batting practice. He was a very proud person.
Well, yeah, he would do that. Grimes used to pitch batting practice, and he was a great spitball pitcher. And he would fool around every now and then to try and let some of the hitters. He would tell them he was going to throw a spitball, and still had a great. It was a great pitch then. Fitzsimmons was, he used to pitch batting practice, but I felt sorry for Fitzsimmons. He was a real nice man, gentleman, fine. Couldn't manage. He was too nice a fella, and some of the fellas took advantage of him, both off the field, on the field. He couldn't. I think he only managed that
a
one
year.
Year
and a half or 2 years.
That was it. He just couldn't. He was too nice a fellow to be a good manager. I think he got very. And having pitched as long as he did, he didn't have the right temperament to be a manager. Couldn't do it.
One last question. That is, were you in the Phils the day Ron Northey hit the homer in the 15th inning to win the 1-0 ball game? That may have occurred before June.
Yes. Doesn't stand out in my mind.
It did happen in 1944.
Did it?
Yeah.
15 inning ball game.
What happened after the 44 season ended? If I recall, your major league record stops after 44. Did you go into service, or did the Phillies let you go, or did you go back to the minors?
The Phillies during that winter traded me to Oakland for a Les Scarcella, who was first baseman. He didn't want to come here. His wife had died, and he didn't want to come here, nor did I want to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they canceled the deal.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the 45 season, I was still belonged to the Phillies. Well, I negotiated with him. And I didn't go to spring training with them. They started spring training, and they still didn't know what they were going to do with me. And I said that I could play with them on a limited basis. It was still at the draft bid at the beginning of 45.
Mm-hmm.
So. They still held the City Series then, and they were playing the A's at Shea Park. And I talked to Fitzsimmons before the game. And he said, okay, come down, we'll sign you, and you'll stay with us. So I went down after the game. And they said, well, they can't use me on those conditions. Give me my release. So they gave me, they released me. I went to Wilmington on a part-time basis. That was Phillies Farm Club.
Yeah.
And went down there and pitched a little bit, but the traveling back and forth and back and forth was 2 months of it. I just stopped, and that was it. On a voluntary retired list, that was it. Retired.
Fine. Okay, I know you want to get to the hospital,
yes,
so I'll stop now.